We actually submit a 10-year forecast. Our job is to make sure we're representing the conditions on the ground so that our colleagues back home are looking for the right molecules to fit the next generation.
One of the hot topics in agriculture today are, of course, biologicals. It seems very new. It's not new. We can trace some of our technologies and lineage back to the first patented legume, Rhizobia inoculant, in 1896.
Welcome, listeners, back to the Ag News Daily Podcast, weekly edition of the show. You gave me homework last week, Delaney, and I didn't do anything with my homework to come out with a better way to introduce that.
Come on, Tanner. You only had one assignment.
Oh, you gave me way more assignments than that. Don't let the listeners think I only had one job. But we are not together today, so this will be the first time that we've done video since we started recording in the studio separately. So where are you at, Delaney?
I'm in beautiful San Diego, California this week. I was at a business conference, and we thought we'd test our hands at trying this virtual video setup. So as you can see, I'm in a hotel room. So not a super exciting backdrop compared to yours, Tanner, but I'm not going to complain because the weather out here really is annoyingly nice, as folks around here say.
So are you going to come home or are you going to stay there for a while?
Well, I guess time will tell.
All right. Well, let's get into the news. We'll start off with a little bit of weather here. We do have red flag warnings that have been issued for the eastern two-thirds of Nebraska and parts of several other states in the Midwest, according to the National Weather Service. Counties in Iowa and South Dakota are also included, along with strips of land throughout central Kansas, stretching from Nebraska to the Oklahoma borders, according to the National Weather Service maps. In eastern Nebraska, we could see those gusts of wind hitting 30 to 40 miles per hour, according to the agency. Relative humidity will drop around 15%, and that's what makes wildfire spread potentially rapid and dangerous. So the National Weather Service is putting that precaution out there. In south central Kansas, winds will be sustained 20 to 30 miles per hour with that relative humidity below 17%. Those gusts could hit 40 at times. It's looking like a windy and typical temperatures for most of our weekend here, Delaney. However, we could see a widespread warm-up next week, Sunday into the beginning of next week. So it'll be interesting to see how beautiful and how many seeds get put into the ground next week.
No kidding. I think we're going to see some big jumps in the crop progress planting report next week. And even though 16 out of our 18 top corn growing states are considered in a drought, we did see more growers take to the field over the past week. As of April 7th, we're having now 3% of the nation's corn crop in the ground, up 2% from the week prior. Tanner, like you said, I think we're going to see a lot of planters roll. Do you think we'll be in double digits this time next week?
I think so. It sounds like a lot of folks here in central Iowa have plans to really get going hard, so I assume it's going to be the same way. Did see some pictures from Indiana of some good rainfall, so they might be a little bit behind, but I bet you we jump up.
I think so as well, but I love seeing farmers take to plant 2024 on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. We asked a couple of folks across social media to allow us to share their photos here with you all on today's episode. So some fun photos, Tanner, of folks hitting the fields. But if you are going to be starting planting here within the next week or couple of weeks, send us your photos or tag us on social media at Ag News Daily. Maybe we'll feature a couple in the upcoming episodes. But that warm temperature, I think, certainly will get folks itching. Tanner, when do you think you guys will start?
Yeah, we're hoping to get started this weekend. We got a couple of things to wrap up, and it should be go time for us.
Well, maybe we'll see an Ag News Daily episode where you're sitting in the planter reporting to us from there.
Boy, that would be difficult to get the news and have the planter rolling. Maybe it'd be sitting still in the field. However, we did see Governor Kim Reynolds here on Tuesday sign into law new reporting requirements and harsher penalties related to foreign farmland ownership within the state. The governor signed Senate File 2204. Reynolds said that Iowa plays an important role in America's food chain, and while Iowa speaks on threats to American agriculture, the country will listen. The law will grant the state attorney general more powers in oversight related to foreign land ownership, including the ability to subpoena foreign landowners for financial records and land purchase agreements for investigation purposes. The existing law limits foreign land purchases of up to 300 or limits purchases to 320 acres, with those who had farmland in ownership before 1980 allowed to still retain their land ownership if it is greater than that figure. But now, foreign landowners will be required to provide details to the state about their land owned in the state if they own greater than 250 acres. The law also raises fines and violations for those reporting requirements. Failing to hold and report your holdings every 2 years could be up to a $10,000 fine per violation, Delaney, for foreign landowners. And failure to disclose leases or purchase agreements of farmland by these foreign entities could produce a fine of up to 25% of the property's value per violation, a potentially much higher rate than the previous $2,000 maximum fine. According to the 2022 data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Delaney, nearly 514,000 acres of Iowa agricultural land is held by foreign investors. This represents roughly 1.6% of the state's total privately held ag land. So a small percentage there, but a big impact to regulate this going forward within the state, Delaney.
No doubt. That's exactly what I was thinking as well, Tanner. And I was trying to scratch my brain as you were sharing that story of now what state Iowa makes as far as those that are putting in place legislation to protect the state's land owners. But as we continue to watch the aftermath here of the Port of the Baltimore accident, the Army Corps of Engineers shared some new progress on the removal of debris and the path forward to get that pathway up and running for barges and shipments. In a recent statement, according to the Army Corps' website, they're working with local, state, and federal partners to clear the debris and have worked to establish a tentative timeline for restoration. They plan to be able to provide ships 280 feet wide by 35 feet deep, limited access via the channel by the end of April is their timeline they're shooting for there. Once that is opened, the channel will allow one-way traffic into and out of the Port of Baltimore. They didn't say yet how they were going to regulate that one-way traffic, but the Corps is also predicting that the permanent restructuring, which allows ships 700 feet wide by 50 feet deep, will have navigation through the channel, and that will be restored by the end of May. So that's a pretty fast timeline here, but that would resume normal port access, Tanner. And as we shared on the podcast previously, that Port of Baltimore really is pretty key for quite a few different agricultural goods. So seems that they are working really quickly to deal with this aftermath, and their rescue and search and now rebuilding efforts are happening at pretty rapid paces.
Yeah, certainly good to see progress moving forward very quickly. And other areas of progress, in an effort to prevent domestic cattle from being exposed to the bovine influenza A virus, or BIAV, 17 states have now restricted cattle imports from states where that virus has been found in infected dairy cows. Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Delaware. I feel like I'm singing a song here, Delaney. Florida, Hawaii, Idaho, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Nebraska, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Utah, and West Virginia have blocked cattle movement from states such as Texas, Kansas, New Mexico, Ohio, Michigan, and Idaho, where BIAV has been confirmed, according to the USDA. The USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service will not be issuing any federal quarantine orders at this time, nor the agency is stating that they are recommending any other state quarantines to be official or put any official hold orders on cattle. However, Delaney, they say, and I'm using quotes here, they say, "We strongly recommend minimizing the movement of cattle as much as possible, with special attention to elevating the risk and factoring in risk into movement and the decisions you have around moving those cattle." So it's very clear here that this is high alert for much of the industry, Delaney.
I think you could have created like a rap song with all of those different states. We'll have to put that on your homework for next week.
See, I'm already getting more work to do.
Well, it sounds like the EPA still has some work ahead of them. We once again have GREET in the headlines for having no real updates. Last week at the Society of Environmental Journalists annual meeting in Philadelphia, EPA Administrator Regan stated that the GREET model will be complete in the very near future, but didn't give an official timeline or expected date. Of course, that deadline has come and gone now, as we saw March 1st being when they originally thought they would release the GREET model, and it seems, Tanner, patience is running thin within the industry. In Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley's weekly call with reporters, he apparently shared he was very unhappy with the amount of time it has taken to get the GREET model. And he said he was also unhappy from what rumors he's been hearing about how the GREET model updates will be reflected when released. He shared that some of the updates for sustainable aviation fuel from the Biden administration just aren't really going to correlate to how farmers are actually producing corn. In a quote to reporters, he said, quote, "We understand that this model might say that you can use corn as a feedstock, but it will have to be grown in one of three conditions, minimum tillage, cover crops, or these new crop corn planters where you have very precise applications of chemicals or fertilizer." He shared that the problem, Tanner, is that when grain gets commingled at an elevator or cooperative, you can't tell one kind of corn from the other, and that will make the GREET model formula really hard to follow and formulate. So he did not seem impressed by some of those preliminary rumors he's heard about how the GREET model will be formed. But hearing rumors that maybe now we're shooting for a mid-May to end of May timeframe, Tanner.
Yeah, and that is one of the questions I think we've been asking those close to this from the beginning, is what and how you identify one kernel of corn to the next kernel of corn. We got some good news for our listeners in the Texas Panhandle area. The application deadline for the Young Farmer Grant Program has been extended. Now, it's only been extended through April 17th, 2024, but this is in an effort to provide additional support to young farmers impacted by the Texas Panhandle wildfires. We reported in February the Smokehouse Creek fire, the largest recorded in Texas history, that claimed over 1 million acres in Texas and Oklahoma, results in replacing miles of lost fence and other major expenses. A person who had something damaged by the fire could be eligible to apply for a new farmer grant to help repair their operation. The grant, in addition to the State of Texas Agricultural Relief Fund, is aimed at farmers interested in enhancing their operations through expansion, better land management, increased technology utilization, or other improvements. The Texas Department of Agriculture supports production agriculture, whether it involves hooves, feathers, or flowers, Delaney. And as an average age in the Texas farmers and ranchers continues to increase, this is an incentive to do all that they can to nurture the rising generations of agricultural producers coming up, especially when they're facing challenging economic and environmental concerns, Delaney. So good to see here that that application was extended, not for very long, but at least there's more opportunity for our listeners.
There absolutely is, Tanner. But switching our attention here to some global geopolitical headlines, Russian missiles and drones destroyed a large electricity plant near Kiev and hit power facilities in several regions of Ukraine on Thursday, according to officials. They're really trying to ramp up here, it seems like, pressure on Ukraine's energy system as Kiev is starting to run low on air defenses. The major attack, more than 2 years after this invasion has happened, completely destroyed also a coal-powered thermal plant near the capital. Unconfirmed footage shared on social media and a variety of other places showed a firing range at large Soviet-era facilities and black smoke belching from it. According to President Zelensky, he said, "We need air defense and other defense support, not eye closing and long discussions." I think, Tanner, that was probably in response to the way that maybe the Western world has started to respond to the request for more military aid.
Yeah, it seems as though that is going to be a continued message. We did see, though, that Ukraine's maritime agricultural exports were at 2.95 million metric tons in the last 2 weeks of March. Corn dominated those shipments. The Farm Ministry data is showing this result for us. Ukraine traditionally exports 95% of its ag goods via the Black Sea or Danube ports. And at least we are seeing a steady movement. When I look back at the 2 weeks in earlier part of March, it's pretty much a steady line there. So at least our Ukrainian farmers have some consistency, but we are definitely not back to pre-war levels yet at this moment. And now it's time, Delaney, to jump into our first conversation of the day. We have noonesis. That was one of the fun words that we got to learn here. We're going to welcome Adam Kaiser into this conversation. Let's hear what he has to say. Sitting here at Commodity Classic 2024, excited to introduce to you, our audience,
Adam Kaiser of Novonesis. So you are a technical agronomist for the company, correct?
Yes, I am.
So what is a technical agronomist for our listeners?
Depends on the day. It depends on the season. I think it's the best job in the world because it changes with the season. Just when you're bored with what you're doing, we're going to shift into a new season in agriculture, and it gets new again.
Absolutely. So how long have you been with the company?
In a roundabout way, I've been with the products and technologies for over a decade.
Oh, wow. So tell us a little bit about how you've gotten into this role or how Novonesis has evolved to where it is today.
Yeah, so Novonesis, I'm still getting used to the name change. So I'm used to Novozymes. So Novonesis is the combination of Novozymes and Christian Hansen. It was a merger that just completed here in the last few weeks, maybe a month ago. So the company as a whole is biosolutions for many different aspects of our lives, but we're here with the plant health division, so we're working with products for the betterment of crop production. Another very similar business unit that we have is we supply enzymes to the corn ethanol industry, so we support growers in a variety of facets.
Interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys have your hands in a lot of different pieces of the pie, and I was interested to learn, Tanner, I'm sure you were as well, that the company has been around for over a century now.
Yeah, we can trace some of our technologies through and lineage back to the first patented legume, Rhizobia inoculant, in 1896.
Wow, 1896.
Mm-hmm. That's a long time and a lot of development. So explain to our listeners what you just kind of mentioned to me about how you provide enzymes to ethanol plants.
Well, I'm no expert there, but obviously in the manufacture of alcohol, whether you're a home brewer or like to make bourbon whiskey, you know, you need yeast, you need microorganisms, and the breakdown of those starches and carbohydrates into simple sugars, which further ferment into alcohol. So the ethanol plants, to extract more ethanol from a bushel of corn, utilize enzymes and other additives in the process to increase ethanol yield.
Wow.
And it sounds like biology really is at the core of everything you're doing, regardless of if it's for the ethanol industry, for human-grade consumption. Biology is in the core DNA of the company. How is biosolutions tied into that as well? Because I saw that in some of your materials on your website, and I thought, I want to clarify that for our listeners.
Sure. One of the hot topics in agriculture today are, of course, biologicals, and it seems very new. You know, here at Commodity Classic, there's a lot of vendors and companies that are exploring opportunities to increase farmer growth and plant health. It's not new. Like I mentioned, it traces back to over 120 years ago. You know, we've been a part of that and the evolution of that, you know, as simple as legume inoculants and now to products and technologies we're looking at today. And outside of traditional row crop agriculture, maybe more horticulture and things on the coast where biopesticides are even being employed in complement to chemistry tools as well.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned maybe the special crops or secondary crops, because when we think row crops, or when we think crops, we're thinking conventional row crops, and we really kind of focused on that angle for biologicals. But to your point, Adam, biologicals have been used in maybe some of these secondary markets like horticulture, specialty crops, etc., for quite some time, it sounds like.
They definitely have. Of course, outside of the U.S., they're even a bigger play in traditional row crop agriculture as well.
So as you mentioned that you're fresh off of a merger, what does the merger bring to the agriculture industry as far as the products are offered?
Still yet to be determined from the chair I sit in, but I know there's a great deal of competence in other organisms that we at Novozymes currently aren't experts in. Manufacturing is a huge part of anything, right? And when it comes to bacillus fermentation, I know our folks from Christian Hansen are the experts in that realm.
Right.
So we're excited to bring along those products and technologies and pair them with our existing technologies we have.
That's right.
I also was surprised to learn you guys have more than 10,000 folks working for the company worldwide. That's a big footprint.
That's news to me. I knew it was a big number. I've often been told and have even repeated that Novozymes, now Novonesis, might be the largest company you've never heard of. Outside of our space, again, biosolutions for human health, animal feed, textile industries, baking, brewing, milk production. I mean, the list goes on and on. Anytime a microbe or an enzyme or a biosolution is at play, we're there.
I think that's so unique too, Tanner. You know, it's almost not quite a closed loop system, but you're really impacting every part of the value chain from field all the way to
fork.
Pretty much the fork. Yeah,
field to fork is a tagline we've used often.
So as you've gotten to meet producers and have conversations with them here at Commodity Classic, what are you telling them to help mitigate risks in this 2024 growing season?
I don't know if I'm qualified to do that all the time, to be honest with you. They have a lot of questions. We don't tell anybody how to they're the experts, right? I could never do what they do. They do come to us for advice and help navigate the space to successfully use our products, having questions about the industry and space, and we're pretty qualified to do that. Like I mentioned, you know, producing similar type organisms, we've been a part of, you know, the evolution of what we see as biologicals in agriculture today. And having that expertise from manufacturing to compatibility and understanding how they work together with current maybe chemical means,
right,
is pretty important. So those are a lot of the conversations that we have. And like I mentioned, we don't tell anybody how to do something better. It's about listening and understanding the situation. I reside in southern Minnesota. We've had conversations with growers all across the U.S., and it's amazing how different they are, but also how similar, whether the crop or whatever, that how plants and crops grow and are harvested.
Right. 2024 is going to be another crucial year, Delaney.
Yeah, we certainly talk about farm profitability and ROI all the time. And it's in years like this, I think actually biologicals and some of these alternative products really make sense, because you're potentially reducing inputs on the other end and still going to see increased yield, increased soil health, increased plant health. But in some of those conversations you're having with growers outside of Commodity Classic, those folks you work with day to day, do you have a story or a moment where it really hit home for a grower and it was kind of that aha moment for them?
Well, anybody that knows me knows the storybook is long with me and extensive. I guess really talking about the history, I think what I mentioned early on is just the aha moment of how far back biological use in agriculture is, preceding commercial fertilizer. Going back to ancient times, in fact. And I think then the comfort level of these products and technologies, is greatly improved. I think that's the aha moment to me, is just understanding this is not something new. This is something that, you know, it's foundational for agriculture, period.
It's so crazy to me, too, that it goes back that far in history, but biologicals as a term has been maybe a buzzword here over the last 5 years
right.
or so.
Yeah, you're not wrong at all, and I think that we're probably going to catch the attention of a lot of our listeners when they don't realize how far back the usage goes. So if they want to dive deeper into Novonesis, how do they look up more information?
The internet. Hey, Siri. Whatever it is today. But our website, novonesis.com, I'm sure our old links with Novozymes work. I'm not totally aware how far back we go. I know I open a lot of my trainings, because we offer a lot of trainings for agronomists. I open up with that, you know, and start taking that. And that came through research of ancient agriculture as well, you know, from moving soil from a plot of land to another to improve crop growth. They didn't understand why.
Right.
They just noticed that it worked, and it led to where we are today.
So are the products available through direct purchase, or is it through a network of dealers?
Yeah. Traditional ag retail is our go-to-market strategy, has been and continues to be. So any cooperative, large chain.
So they can work with their trusted agronomist as is, just needs to inquire about the products that you produce.
That would work.
Well, that's great. Well, this has been a fun Commodity Classic. Hopefully you're enjoying your time as well. We appreciate you coming over and sitting with us.
Thank you.
Well, another great conversation, Tanner, we had at Commodity Classic just over a month ago now was with BASF's Marketing Director for Crop Protection, Brady Spangenberg, talking all things crop protection and what's ahead for the growing season here. So let's turn it over to that conversation.
Brady, we're so excited to chat with you today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Delaney. Happy to be here.
Brady, I would love to dig into learning a little bit more about your role. It sounds like you've got a lot of big shoes to fill with your role as head of crop protection for all of the U.S.
Yeah, leading the marketing group is really interesting. We're trying to make sure we manage both the current year and plan a couple of years out, because you know the products that are on the floor today are really the result of planning that you know we and the rest of the team have done a couple of years prior, and it takes that amount of time to make sure you have everything in the right spot.
Tanner, I'm just always amazed at the amount of foresight you have to say what are growers going to be dealing with in 3, 4, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and being able to plan all of that.
It is, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your past. What was your connection to agriculture before getting into this role?
Sure. So I grew up in Council Bluffs. I had friends that farmed on the bluffs, you know, square bales of hay and some other things. My father-in-law worked for John Deere in central Iowa, and so always was kind of around it. And that's the best part about agriculture is if you're close to it, you're also never very far away from it. And that's, for me, the most exciting part, that you get to see your products, your work, materialize in things that people use for fuel, food, and fiber.
Yeah. So how long have you been with BASF?
Been with BASF for 13 years.
Wow.
Actually started over in Germany. Was working in a global communications role and have worked my way back into the U.S. organization for the past 9.
Wow.
That's really neat. I'm curious. I know this wasn't in our pre-approved talking points, but with your role being in Germany first and then transitioning into the U.S., what were some of the differences or similarities you saw between what was going on in Germany versus what was going on here in the United States?
I really got to realize how big and differentiated BASF is, right? It's, you know, we think a lot about agriculture and the ag products division, but there's a whole other set of different divisions, you know, basic chemicals, monomers, care chemicals, that and the way the divisions really work together from an R&D perspective and a commercial perspective gives the company a different type of a sense of how we can deliver for the customer.
I got to ask, do you speak German?
Ja, ich kann Deutsch. Kein
wow.
Problem.
I love that, Tanner.
That is great.
That's the first time we've ever had somebody speak German, I think, on the podcast.
Bratwurst.
And I think I can understand what he's saying.
Yeah, I got
so
that one.
We'll stop now before he really challenges me. But it's fun when we get to talk to people from companies that touch so many different industries. So BASF creates chemistry, you know, the slogan,
sure,
of how that affects. But you work very closely with those in agriculture. So as you are taking this information in, as you stated, to plan for many years, who's involved in that process of collecting data?
So we actually submit a 10-year forecast. And you think, okay, so the material and the information that we're putting out to our global colleagues who are planning are asking for our opinion about what's going to happen in 10 years.
That's a hard thing to predict.
It's almost impossible, but you look at the mega trends, right? You look at the trends over the last 10 years. Well, weed resistance has grown. Different diseases have shown up. So that means we want to invest in products that have a broader spectrum of disease control. You know, efficiency matters. So you want products that activate quicker, that hold longer, that don't require as many tractor trips. So our job is to make sure we're representing the conditions on the ground so that our colleagues back home are looking for the right molecules to fit the next generation.
That's just insane to me that you can have the ability to plan that far out in advance. So when we look at the last year here, we've had, you know, a couple of really good years as far as commodity prices, really good conditions as far as weather have been concerned, maybe pockets where we didn't mm-hmm. see the optimal growing season. But 23, we're coming off still a fairly strong year. Brady, what does that look like? Maybe a recap of 23, and what are we expecting here as we head into 24?
I think what we learned in 23 is that performance matters. Even in an elevated commodity price environment, you can still lose money by sub-optimizing, by going for something that may not hold as long or something that may not work as well. You might not get as much coverage. We saw things with that with you know, your selection of your glufosinate formulation. There are cheaper alternatives, but you want something that's going to perform under most conditions. It's going to go through the sprayer efficiently, and it's going to give you that coverage and that you know, sort of broad spectrum weed control that you're looking for out of your knockdown chemistry. Those that didn't wound up having to go back when you had some late season rain flushes in June and July, and the pigweeds and the water hemp just sprouted right back out.
So what do you think will be some of the challenges for growers here in 2024 as we talk Midwestern United States?
I think 24 is going to be the year of performance. You know, we have softer commodity prices than we had last year. And the inclination might be to try and save your way to prosperity. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that Mother Nature doesn't quite understand that math.
Yeah.
And so how are you investing in the right seed to perform, right? We're talking a lot this year about a Zatavo soybean seed lineup. You know, there's potential there for 100-plus bushels. But that means we have to invest. That means we have to prepare right. So you're talking overlapping residuals, your pre and your post, selecting a residual that will hold longer than maybe 10 days. So something like a Zidua herbicide. And then really talking about that performance fungicide spray. You know, are you selecting for something that is broad spectrum, covers a number of diseases, and also reinforces the plant with, you know, optimized growth efficiency, and something that offers protection during drought. I think you mentioned that last year there were pockets that didn't see a lot of rain, and they can still benefit from a fungicide application to carry that plant through.
As we think about 2024, Commodity Classic is the place really to unveil new products, have great discussions with farmers. What are some of the discussions that you've been having with farmers about how we enhance performance here in 2024?
We've been talking a lot about our performance-driven fungicide lineup. I think that the word plant health, which BSF pioneered 10-plus years ago with Headline, 20-plus years ago with Headline, has become kind of ubiquitous in the fungicide sphere. And so for us, we're looking at a new class of fungicides that we have in the marketplace, Veltima fungicide for corn, Revitec for soybeans, and looking at the different ways that those fungicides perform under different conditions. So you need broad-spectrum disease control. That's a no-brainer in fungicide. But you also need support in environmental stressful environmental conditions. Can the fungicide help the plant survive when it doesn't rain for 3 weeks, as an example? Can the fungicide help the plant grow a stronger stem when you get 50-mile-an-hour wind events? And we've had growers tell us they use Veltima as part of their wind insurance.
Wow.
As an example. So talking about the lessons from 23 and applying those in 24 is going to be the key.
So as producers feel like this might be one of their most challenging seasons ahead of them, how is BASF meeting them in the field to help provide that support?
Our goal is always to work with with the channel partner. We find that success is a conversation between a community. So it's not just the farmer, it's their retailer, it's their agronomist. You know, it can be their banker when you're talking about investing in a crop. And so our job is to facilitate that conversation from a plan perspective. We continue to offer a leading low financing program in the marketplace. We think that helps get people having a planned conversation versus constantly reacting to you know, all the curveballs that Mother Nature throws at you. That to me really gets folks off on the right foot. And the more people we have in that discussion, the better.
Absolutely.
Brady, I want to ask, I know you're working usually a couple years, maybe a decade out in advance. Can you tease any of the things that BASF is looking to for the future?
Sure. So in the not too distant future, BASF will be launching our own unique germplasm in the Zatavo soybean seed lineup. There's not too many people doing their own breeding these days. And so having really new germplasm on the market in a high-performing seed is what we're really excited about. We do have Liberty Ultra on the horizon, so that's an improvement on the current Liberty herbicide glufosinate formulation. That should be available here in the next 12 months. And Certain herbicide, so a new corn herbicide. First time ever that anyone's encapsulated a PPO and made it available, so something like Sharpen, but encapsulated that Sharpen molecule, that Kixor molecule, so that it can still go early post in corn. So what we're trying to do is create and launch brands that help people be more efficient, help them make sure that they have products to support them when they're trying to map everything out.
Well, this has been a great conversation. I'm glad that you were able to join us today. But for our listeners, if they want to learn more, how do they look you up?
So they can always find us on the web, and the web will direct you to your local BSF rep. So BSF.com, BSFagproducts.com. And then we also have a few sort of more agronomically oriented channels. If you're more interested in sort of medium form agronomic insights, please visit us at Grow Smart Live. And if you're looking for more of a research library on fungicide performance, RevX Fields, so RevXFields.com, can get you the right information about fungicide performance in your area. Not just BSF fungicides, but us versus our competition. And if you are on the fence about should I or shouldn't I invest in a fungicide, that website should really help you try and make that decision.
Well, good. Thank you again for spending time with us today.
Thanks so much. I love being here.
Well, Tanner, that was another great discussion there. Looking forward to some more fun conversations on the podcast. We've got a special episode coming for our listeners next week. But this week in a couple other headlines, we saw, of course, the April WASDE report came and went with little excitement to the markets. As we take a look at what was released on the global stage, the world-ending stocks for corn, soybeans, and wheat all came in lower than the March WASDE report, but higher than the average trade guess. U.S. ending stocks, however, for corn, soy, and wheat all came in higher than the average trade guess, and we saw corn and wheat exports remain unchanged from the March report. Soybean exports, however, were cut about 20 million bushels as we see Brazilian beans really coming online. We also saw that the USDA did not touch Brazilian corn or bean production, and that really kind of shocked the market here, Tanner, as we are still seeing a pretty big disparity between what Brazil's CONAB is reporting and now what the USDA continues to hold true. But nonetheless, we are seeing quite a bit of South American crop come online. They are almost through their harvest season, so it is not surprising, I think, that we saw USDA cut soybean exports here for the United States.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of response on social media, especially on X, in regards to that report. On the livestock side of the equation, after last week's scare with the human contracted avian influenza case, the cattle market seemed to have regrouped a little bit after seeing choppy trade action this week. June live cattle headed into the Friday session in positive territory in the lean hog markets. Although we saw a bit of an ugly trade session midweek, June lean hogs do appear to be healing, heading into their summer rally. And that season will continue to bring an upward trend for at least the next couple of weeks following their normal season tendencies, Delaney. But that sounds like a pretty good wrap to the news for the first time recording it in two different locations. Listeners, we appreciate you hanging out with us. Delaney, like you said, send us your planting pictures. We want to see what your progress looks like in the field, and maybe we can use some of those photos in our content.
Absolutely, Tanner. You have to take some photos while you're in the planter here over the weekend as well. Share with our listeners.
I can do that. But what do you say, Delaney, for today? Should we let the listeners go?
Let's let them go. conversation.